Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello everybody, welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, That Time When edition. We are going back into the history of Formula One to reminisce on some tales of just some rather interesting stuff. This week, we are talking about that time when Max Verstappen won on his Red Bull debut. Now, joining me in the virtual podcast booth is none other than WTF1 founder and resident Max Verstappen. Fanboy, I don't even think fanboy even really describes you, Tommy. It's Tom Bellingham.
Hello. Glad to be back.
And I've done that. It was kind of an intro like there isn't another guest. And of course, in the third box, or however you want to see it, is our WTF1 editor, Katie Fairman. Katie, I don't know what to label you, because I don't think you are a Max Verstappen fanboy or girl. Are you a Red Bull fan girl?
I suppose so. I'm one of these boring people. I don't really have a favourite team or driver or anything.
I suppose so, involved. But then you're also saying you're not a fan. Okay, all right, we've gone. Okay, cool. All right,
I'm impartial.
You're impartial, but maybe a tiny bit fangirl. Either way, we're talking about Max Verstappen and that crazy 2016 Spanish Grand Prix where, the two Mercedes collided, didn't they? But before we get into that, let's talk about the early career of Max Verstappen, although it is still very much the early stages of his career, it has to be said, isn't it? And Tommy, you probably know this off by heart. You probably have his entire career timeline just posted up on your bedroom wall. Do you want to take us through, Max being in a Formula 3 car at 4 years old? Or?
I mean, I can do, yeah. It's on my wall. No, it's not really. So Max Verstappen went straight from karting into the F3 championship. He won loads in karting. Actually found in 2013 he won the South Garda Winter Cup, the FIA European Championship, the Euro Series in the KZ1 class, the Masters Series, the FIA European Championship, and the FIA World KZ Championship. So he won a lot in karting. There was already a bit of hype, but then went into the F3 championship and created even more of a hype train when he won 10 races essentially in his debut year for a team which, while it's a spec series, maybe not the best team. So his teammates were 11th in the championship and 20th and scored one podium between them, whereas Max got 10 wins and 16 podiums. So he definitely was outperforming the car that year. And once he was doing that, there was just this massive hype train about him.
Were you the conductor?
Oh,
were you,
of course.
Right at the front? When did you jump on this hype train, out of interest?
When he started in Formula 3, it was kind of like, oh, okay, like, this guy seems really good. And also, Verstappen, name again, back in motorsport. And I watched a couple of his F3 races and, he was... even more of the bin or win kind of driver than he is now. And as a kind of fan of the likes of Montoya and people like that, he was very much my kind of driver to support. So he was an exciting driver to watch back then, as he is now, really.
Insane stuff. We're not worthy of your company, Tommy. But yeah, like you say, he went from karting into the F3 Championship, which is something that not many drivers do. People like Callum Ilott has done the same, but he was granted an FIA International Race License, which allowed him to make that jump into F3. But he won 10 races in his first year in F3, which is amazing, but he still only finished the championship in third. In fact, it was another rookie, Esteban Ocon, who actually won the championship in 2014. But yeah, like you say, a lot of attention on him. I'm sure the surname probably helped things, but he was certainly a very exciting upcoming driver. So,
well, imagine having 10 wins and 16 podiums and still not winning the title. That is quite some going. Is that because the rest of the time he binned it?
Yeah, I mean, you look at his results and it was pretty much podium or retire, which is very Max Verstappen, isn't it? In fact, he retired from quite
eight
a few
times.
Races, yeah, eight times. But
one did not start.
Yeah, six races he either retired or did not start early on. But then the real hype train sort of kicked off when he won six consecutive races in a row, which in a spec series is pretty, like, wild. Yeah, won three races at Spa and three races at the Norris Ring, no relation to Lando. And yeah, that was when it was like, okay, this guy is pretty special, and there's a lot of hype around him.
Well, I think the buzzword for this podcast is hype, isn't it? So, and the hype train continued at the end of 2014 when the Red Bull Junior team decided to sign him up. And, well, I don't think anyone really saw the turnaround between him being signed up by Red Bull and actually being a Formula One driver for the 2015 season, which, of course, you know, gave a lot of talking points because he was only 17, wasn't he, if I remember correctly. And a lot of people were discussing whether
16
at the time,
he was signed.
Yeah. 16 at the time. That is ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And the fact that, you know, there was a lot of talking points about whether he was too young, you know, was there something missing in the F1 sort of driver license regs to stop such young talents coming into Formula One? But he was announced at Toro Rosso in 2015 and basically said F all the haters and showed quite a bit of performance straight away, didn't he?
He did. There was a lot of, people like, oh, it's way too young to be in Formula One. He shouldn't be in Formula One. And then that's when they actually announced the point system that we have now to stop this happening. But then obviously he's got into Formula One and has been arguably one of the best drivers to get into Formula One. So it's kind of like, do you really want to stop people like that coming in? But I guess it's, you know, it's not everyone's like that. But you mentioned about the junior team and how quickly it was. I was actually working for Red Bull around this time. And I remember it being very sort of quick, how it kind of went from hype to let's get him in the junior team to announcing him as a driver. And I went back through and found the articles and dates. So on August the 12th, 2014, so yeah, he was 16 at this point, Max Verstappen was announced as a Red Bull Junior driver. Then on the 16th of August was the race at the Nürburgring, which was his first race as a Red Bull Junior driver, which he won. And then on the 18th of August, Red Bull announced he was going to be driving for Toro Rosso in 2015. So 2 days after his debut with the Red Bull Junior team, he turned up, won the race, and they were like, right, you're in F1. Mad.
Here are the keys.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? I was definitely one of the people that at the time was thinking, nah, this is far too young. He's a child. He should not be allowed behind the wheel of an F1 car. And obviously, like we say, there was a lot of excitement around him as he was the son of F1 podium finisher Jos Verstappen. But still, 16 years old and then to be 17 years old when you make your F1 debut, I was still thinking, this is too young. And I'm sure everybody did the same thinking, well, when I was 17, I hadn't even done this, this and this. And this kid is managing to jump in an F1 car. How is this fair? But like Tommy said, he has well and truly proved himself as being ready for the opportunity and it's super exciting to see, well, to think about what else he's going to achieve further down the line. But we won't talk about that
yet. It is crazy, actually, where you mentioned that about, you know, not thinking it was good enough. There was so much media attention on it. And something that I just remembered, actually, that now you mention it, he actually crashed a show car. He was doing a show car run and was doing donuts, 16 years old at the time, and took the front wing off. And, you know, that was just another thing that everyone could be like, this is madness. What are Red Bull doing? Why are they putting this 16-year-old kid in a car? It was just ridiculous. But, well, we'll find out what happens.
Helmut,
I'm sure,
Marco.
Everyone knows. Yeah.
Were you a doubter at the time, Tommy?
I knew there was, well, not a doubter. It was a little bit like, why are they rushing him so early? Because Jos Verstappen was a very similar prospect, although it seems laughable now to think that, you know, Jos didn't exactly achieve much in Formula One, really. But he was the same. He was massively hyped up junior series and came in way too young, very little experience, and just flopped. And there was a lot of people, including a little doubt in my mind, that it might be the same story with Max, that he's just getting in way too early. Whereas, you know, if he's this good, have another series in Formula 3 with maybe a top team, win the championship, then go to Formula 2, which is the normal traditional route. But for him to go karting, Formula 3, F1, so 2 years apart between karting and Formula 1 is almost unheard of. I mean, Kimi Raikkonen's the only other driver I can think of that did that.
Yeah, it's a serious fast track, isn't it? Serious fast track through the ranks of motorsport, and you can imagine a lot of jealous drivers, a lot of that hate was probably just pure jealousy, and you know what we've mentioned, at the fact that, you know, when I was 17, I was in sixth form, not having a clue what I wanted to do. So, you know, there's a lot of people that were a little bit resentful of that. But yeah, we've mentioned that his first season with Toro Rosso was impressive. And then he then stayed on with the team for the 2016 season, which is when it starts to get a little bit spicy, doesn't it? Because over on the Red Bull side of things, we had Mr. Danny Kvyat, who was basically given the shot, wasn't he, in that top seat, I guess. It's probably not as quick as they are now, would you say?
Yeah, he replaced Vettel, didn't he, when Vettel decided to go to Ferrari, and it was a very quick decision that I think they were caught a bit surprised by it and was like, okay, and then they promoted him up.
Yeah, it wasn't so much a Rosberg retiring from Mercedes situation, but it was still a kind of, oh, Vettel's leaving, okay.
Yeah.
And then they had to get someone in. Danny Kvyat was that person. And if we take a look at the 2016 Russian Grand Prix, that was when Kvyat actually crashed into Vettel, didn't he?
He did. And this is the time where Vettel was still, you know, a recent Red Bull driver. Things ended they didn't end badly. So, you know, you see when Vettel talks to Christian Horner and Helmut Marko, he's almost like their kind of son, almost, that they have massive respect for and still chat and are really good friends. So, the Russian Grand Prix, after, you know, Max had a really good debut season, but then Kvyat had a pretty good first season alongside Ricciardo in 2015. I think he actually scored more points than Daniel Ricciardo.
Yeah, he beat Ricciardo.
Yeah, which is impressive. But yeah, start of 2016, Kvyat, the funny thing, before the Russian Grand Prix, Kvyat actually scored a podium. Famous...
Where he also had a run-in with Vettel, didn't he? Where he... that was where the torpedo meme
came. It was, so
from the cool-down room.
Yeah, so he dived down the inside of Vettel at turn one, and Vettel said, you know, he came in like a torpedo, and that kind of meme was born. And then the very next race, you think, well, you know, Kvyat's scored a podium, he's doing well, he had a good season last year, and has... Well, the biggest shocker of all shockers, when he crashes into Vettel, not once, but twice. Not great.
That was a drama. I mean, Kvyat, we all know Kvyat is a talented racing driver, but it's just unfortunate that he has very high highs and then very low lows. And we've seen from experience, Red Bull just can't be bothered with it. They want consistency, they want success, they don't want somebody that they can send out, and as soon as the lights go out, they don't know if they're going to make it round turn one or not. So it was a big shock, I think, for quite a lot of F1 fans and media, for Red Bull to literally just go, no, you're done at Red Bull, get out, you've been demoted, and to bring Max up. Because, like you say, although Max had a good first season, you know, he became the youngest ever driver to start a Grand Prix at the Australian Grand Prix. He was 17 years old, 166 days, had 10 top 10 finishes that year. But still, a lot of us were thinking, he's literally still a kid. He's walking around, he feels like he should have a dummy in his mouth. You know, he's literally a baby and he's being promoted up to next to Ricardo. But, evidently, we were all very, very wrong at that, making those assumptions, because he proved himself literally the first race he got. It's quite funny looking back at the highlights package for the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix on YouTube, and you've got a dramatic opening sequence with Verstappen saying, you know, I'm ready to show myself, I'm ready to show people what I'm made of. And then you have Kvyat saying, I'm going to prove to them that they've made the wrong decision. Fast forward 5 minutes, Verstappen's won his first race. So it's quite unfortunate, but yeah, good for Verstappen.
I'd love to know how many 17-year-olds still have dummies in their mouths, by the way. But yeah, it's it couldn't have gone any worse for Kvyat.
I think
it
showed, I don't know what you guys think, I think it showed that, for me anyway, that decision was more based on Verstappen being good than Kvyat being bad, and they just needed any excuse to get Verstappen in the car. You know, he had a really good first season. Again, to use the word again, there was still loads of hype around him because he'd scored an amazing points tally in the Toro Rosso, put in some amazing moves, and he was already being labelled as the next world champion. And then they needed any excuse. The fact that Kvyat, you know, scored a podium in the previous race and had done well, you know, however much we talk about Albon and Perez, you know, they gave him a lot of opportunities. It wasn't like the first time Albon had an incident, they got rid of him. So this, to me, just screamed more, they just needed Max to get in the car. They wanted Max in the car rather than the fact that they really wanted to demote Kvyat. It was just the fact that, you know, they had no option, and we all know that Max Verstappen and his father have played out their path in Formula One are very demanding, and that was, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a kind of thing in their contract where they're like, look, you know, this guy's a real deal, because all the junior teams wanted him and Red Bull could sign him because they had this, you know, path to a top team that they could put him in the car. So
I'd argue it was incredibly savage from Red Bull. Perhaps there were some learnings there that they then did with Albon to try and give him a bit more time. But for Kvyat to score a podium in China, which was a great performance, to then obviously having a shocker in Russia. But still, you know, drivers have shockers. And clearly there was an ulterior motive there to get Max in, as you say. But, you know, how quickly they rushed him in kind of just sealed Danny Kvyat's fate in general, I think, in Formula One from there on, because obviously he then never went back to a top team, and now he's not in Formula One. So for me, I thought it was incredibly
harsh. It's a big argument, isn't it, of Red Bull. You know, there's a lot of people now that want to see George Russell in a Mercedes, and I'm sure if they replace Bottas with George Russell, a lot of people on Twitter would be like, oh, finally, you know, it's happened. Whereas this was very much like, got huge backlash, and it was very frowned upon, because, you know, they essentially just, while it's a great thing that they promoted Verstappen, they ruined Kvyat's career before it had even really started.
Exactly. Let's take a look, unless Katie, you got anything else to add?
No, I was just going to say that you can see it from two sides. You can see it from a business side of Red Bull thinking, we want Max in our car because we know he's going to be quick. We know he could even potentially offer us some wins. But then dropping Kvyat in the way they did, like you said, Matt, it was very savage, and has obviously had repercussions throughout Kvyat's entire career, because now he's out of F1.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because to be fair, even the end of last year, he was showing some promise, but it was a little bit too late to save his seat, wasn't it, really? Anyway, let's take a look at the actual race itself, the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, and what happened. Of course, it being Spain, Catalonia, testing track, Mercedes 1-2 in quali, with Ricardo third and Verstappen fourth. But then we have one of the biggest incidents I can remember. in recent times between two teammates, and it was Rosberg and Hamilton colliding at turn four on lap one. So Rosberg went into energy saving mode, didn't he? And then he went defensive. Hamilton tried to, and then Hamilton tried to go up the inside. Rosberg covered it, but covered it too much. Hamilton then went on the grass, and they both crashed into each other, which, you know, I think is basically Red Bull's wet dream. And it was crazy to watch it. And, you know, there's lots of arguments of, you know, Rosberg was in the wrong start mode, and that's why he went into energy saving in the completely wrong at the completely wrong time. And it was a bit crazy, wasn't it?
It was absolutely wild. I remember this day well, because it was my first wedding anniversary, and we were actually about to leave and go away for a trip somewhere. And just before the start of the race, we were like packing up, ready to go, and we pretty much planned on like, oh, we won't watch the race, we'll watch it another time,
because it's Spain,
exactly. Yeah, and this was obviously before I knew that Verstappen was going to be driving for Red Bull as well. And before we left, Katie was like, the race is just about to start, should we stay? Because I feel like if Verstappen gets a podium, you'll be like gutted you missed it. So we're like, all right, we'll watch the start, see how it goes. And then the Mercedes crash into each other. It's like, yeah, let's stay. So we sat and watched the whole race. And like, can you imagine if I'd got there and just like checked the result and it's like Verstappen wins? I'd be like, what? Because this was the era where, you know, Mercedes, we complain about it now, how good they are. I feel like 2016 was almost something else. Like, they were so far ahead. I mean, looking at qualifying, they were like, Verstappen was in fourth and he was a second off pole. Like, the Mercedes were just, it was basically they would finish 1-2 every single race without fail unless something happened. So
Well, I mean, talking of being a particular fan girl or whatever we said at the beginning of the podcast, I was a big supporter of Nico Rosberg's, and so for me, this accident just happened in slow motion, as I'm sure it probably did for most F1 fans. But yeah, Hamilton obviously started on pole, 52nd pole of his career, but Rosberg got around him in turn one. But yes, that crash happening, I just couldn't believe my eyes. And it's one of those things that you can't really, in my opinion, put blame on either driver. I think it was one of those things
Rosberg.
That they both but I think they both had similar thought processes, and as a result there wasn't a blame to put on either driver.
Who are you blaming, Tommy?
I'd say 70% Rosberg's fault, because he knew he was in the wrong engine mode and he just turned in on Hamilton. To Hamilton's actually really lucky that he spun on the grass and took Rosberg out, because essentially like the world championship would have been long over, because obviously it went down to the last race and Rosberg ended up winning it. But I feel like that was the year Rosberg won all the opening races, and you know, he'd got in front of Hamilton again, and it was like, if anything, it was good for Hamilton that he managed to at least wipe him out, because otherwise it would have been, you know, a 25-point swing in Rosberg's favour, probably.
Yeah, anyway, back to the actual story itself. So Ricciardo led Verstappen from Sainz, Vettel and Raikkonen.
To this day, I still don't understand how Carlos Sainz ended up third.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. He was eighth on the grid as well, and I don't really get it, but there he was in third. So it's a Red Bull 1-2-3.
Oh, yeah, very true. And when we get to the pit stops, Ricciardo and Vettel went for a three-stop strategy, while Verstappen and Raikkonen went for a two-stop. And Ricciardo dropped behind Vettel in his final stop to fourth. Tried overtaking, but of course it's Catalunya. So Ricciardo basically just got stuck, basically, whilst Verstappen making that two-stop work pretty much.
Yeah, can you imagine what poor Kvyat was thinking after he got demoted, his first race back?
That's the thing. Even Kvyat could have won that race. Like, you know, you can't say, oh, you know, this was a Verstappen masterclass. Kvyat could have, you know, considering he got a podium at China, he could have easily been in the mix there as well.
Yeah, he was...
And then his whole career turns around.
30, so he qualified 13th, and what must he have been thinking when he saw that it's a Red Bull 1-2-3, like, just, and he's not involved in it. He must be absolutely gutted. But This was kind of one of those classic races where you had two Ferraris and two Red Bulls in the pack, and Ferrari were behind, so Red Bull were nervous that Vettel would try a different strategy and it would leave them vulnerable, you know, to the undercut. So they put Ricciardo on a three-stop strategy, which we'll go into later, that he was kind of less than happy about. And eventually that dropped him to fourth, like you mentioned. And this was the famous overtake, or not an overtake, like you say, because it's Catalunya and you can't overtake. Ricciardo was stuck behind Vettel for ages, made a move, couldn't make it stick, ran over the sausage curbs at turn one. And this was the famous Vettel radio where he said, "What are we doing racing or ping pong?" Which was, a classic radio moment. Thanks.
I love how you're driving a Formula One car and ping pong comes into your head.
Of all the sports.
So random, isn't it? Yeah, I love it.
But the pit stops did play a massive part in the strategy and Verstappen getting a bit of a head start on his first F1 race, because he only had the two stops, like we say. Ricciardo had the three stop. But when Ricciardo did pit first, Verstappen became the first Dutchman to lead a Grand Prix. I mean, if you look at Max Verstappen's Wikipedia page, he has all of these first things that he's accomplished, mostly because he was very young when he started F1. But yeah, like you say, Ricciardo wasn't best pleased at the fact that he was put on a three-stop when Verstappen was given a two-stop.
So coming up to the final few laps now, and well, it sounds like I'm commentating. And Raikkonen was within DRS of Verstappen. I'm sure Tommy was sweating buckets at this point. But then it's Spain, so he basically needs to be within 0.1 of a second to do anything around this track.
I've never been more thankful for the Barcelona chicane.
And the thing is, you know, it's a huge amount of pressure for a 17-year-old. 17 was 18 at the time.
Yeah.
17. So 17-year-old, and he was leading a Grand Prix. He gets the Red Bull shot that, of course, he's been dreaming about. And he's got Kimi Raikkonen behind him, a world champion. And, you know, that in just... Obviously, like I said, that Kvyat could have been in the same sort of scenario. But for Verstappen to show that mettle at such a young age was hugely impressive. And, of course, behind that, you had Vettel closing on the pair of them, but wasn't enough. And, of course, again, you know, it doesn't matter if he would have caught anyway, because Spain. And a few other things that... Well, I mean, Daniel Ricciardo, we've already mentioned, wasn't particularly happy after the race, and I'm sure that didn't help things when he got a puncture with two laps to go. So he's on a three stop, wasn't even trying to shred his tyres, and he's the one that gets the puncture.
Yeah, I will just say it was 18, actually. He was 18 years old, sorry. Oh. Before the comments.
Okay. Yeah, no worries, it's fine. I know more about you, Max, than you do. Cool.
Come flying in.
A fan.
Yeah. Yeah, so Raikkonen, put pressure on Verstappen, but just couldn't get past him. You know, he had DRS, but it'd have to be an absolutely wild move, and Raikkonen's much more, like, if it had been the other way around, maybe you would have seen a Verstappen dive bomb where he would have either crashed into the side of him or won the race. But Raikkonen, you know, thought better of it and couldn't really get close enough to make a legitimate overtake. But yeah, Ricciardo was understandably fuming because he was in the lead. We mentioned earlier that Mercedes 1-2 every single race. It's very rare that you're going to get a win if you're not in a Mercedes in this era of Formula One. And he was in the lead and, you know, ends up fourth because of pit stops. And
tinfoil hat. Were they trying to make Max win?
Well, yeah, we'll go into that later because that is another interesting theory, I guess. But the funny thing as well, I just realised that the next race, I think, after 2016 Spain was the 2016 Monaco Grand Prix when they didn't have his tyres ready. So that probably didn't, like, help either. That's probably why he was in an even bigger mood. It's kind of famous the only time we've seen Daniel Ricciardo not smiling, really, isn't it?
Yeah, screaming in the
helmet. Yeah, fuming when he lost the Monaco win. So, yeah. It was a fairly easy victory for Verstappen in the end when you look back at it, but it's kind of like, I guess you'd say maybe Gasly's win this year, where you watch it back and you're like, well, you know, once he was in the lead, he never got close to being overtaken really, and but when you're watching it live, it's the pressure, isn't it? And it's exciting because it's someone new leading the race, and yeah.
Oh, like Monza, isn't it? You know, with
Gasly, exactly.
You know, there was no side-by-side action, but it was the tension, wasn't it?
It was like, oh my God, is Verstappen really going to win on his Red Bull debut? But yeah, ended up...
You've got to remember as well, like we say, Verstappen was so new, really, in comparison to somebody like Raikkonen, who is a world champion. So there was a lot of pressure on his very young shoulders, but Verstappen managed to make it work. It's funny looking back, because we always joke about how the Spanish Grand Prix is normally the most dull on the calendar, maybe apart from Sochi. But even with this, there was a little bit of excitement. Obviously, the first bit being the two Mercedes taking each other out, but Kimi trying to hunt down Verstappen to take that win away from him. But in the end, Kimi blamed the lack of downforce while following as a reason why he had been unable to pass Verstappen. That probably, and just the way that the track is laid out, I would imagine. And then, yeah, you've got a feel for Ricciardo, who got that puncher with two laps to go. He just had the most unbelievable luck. And like you say, Tommy, probably caused something in his brain to start thinking about the future with Red Bull, because like we say, was this done deliberately to put Ricciardo on the three stop and Max on the two stop? We'll never know.
Okay, can I put my tinfoil hat on now, Tommy?
Yeah,
is this an adequate time for all good? Okay, well, you know, did they do it? was this on purpose? And you know, Tommy, of course you'll say no, because you know you're a big Max Verstappen believer. In every form. I don't think any team would personally actually try and harm another driver's race. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, with Vettel and Ferrari, you know, Ferrari were trying to make Leclerc number one, and of course, you know, Leclerc has a longer contract, but you know, why would, there's no reason to you know, affect another, your other driver's performance. I think it's the same here. Of course they want Verstappen to win, and with the two stop, of course that his side of the garage are trying to win the race. With the three stop, I guess, you know, there are questions to be asked, but I just don't, because he didn't even finish second, did he, Ricciardo? And of course he had the puncture anyway, but Red Bull want a 1-2 in that situation every single day of the week, don't they?
The thing is, you've got to give Red Bull the benefit of the doubt that if Vettel had pitted, come out and was absolutely flying, Ricciardo then either has to stay out, which, you know, if he gets a puncture, you'd say, what's he doing? And he's missed the chance to counter Vettel, because Vettel's going to get the undercut. It's one of those unfortunate situations where, because there's a pack really close together, I think, was it Singapore 2019 where Vettel managed to like leapfrog Leclerc, even though Leclerc... And then Leclerc was quite annoyed about it, because he should have got the strategy, and they pitted him, and then Vettel got the leap and stuff. And it's kind of similar situation to that a little bit. I guess there's not a difference in strategy, but they had to think about Vettel. You know, it's not like they just pitted him for no reason. They when you're in that situation, they're probably thinking, you know, we need to get a win here. But there's no doubt, while I don't think it was done on purpose, I wouldn't be surprised if it was maybe the first little bit of doubt creeping into Ricciardo's mind that, you know, there's this young kid here that Red Bull are so happy with that they've booted someone out just to get him in the car. And now I've been screwed over on strategy. He's won the race. He's now the youngest driver in Formula One history, which is amazing for all their marketing. You know, he's going to be breaking records, and, you know, later down the line, the Baku crash and all that kind of stuff, it all adds up, doesn't it, into your mind.
Totally. I think, like you say, the marketing side of things, this was an absolute perfect opportunity for Red Bull with Max winning the race. Obviously, you have the whole story before he'd even crossed the finish line and got that first place position, with the dropping of Kvyat and the promotion, and it without a doubt was worldwide news. You know, it probably made it onto the evening news, because maybe it was a slow news day, but I can remember it being on BBC and being discussed, because like you say, he was now the youngest winner and everything that came along with it. But In terms of if it was done on purpose, I don't think so, because Matt, you're bang on in saying that why would Red Bull sacrifice a potential 1-2? You know, both Mercedes were out of the race come lap one. This was the perfect opportunity to completely maximise their points haul, and that wasn't the case with the end result, obviously. But yes, I think if you're Daniel Ricciardo, you can probably see the other side of the garage, how much love and admiration there is for this new kid who's literally just rocked up in your garage. And perhaps there was a little bit of doubt in the back of his mind.
Fuming, absolutely fuming. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it. We've covered the whole of the 2016 Spanish Grand Prix, it feels like. Blames and all sorts. So there's lots of things I'm sure people will agree and disagree with what we've said. So please be sure to get involved in the comments section. Do you think it was on purpose that Red Bull wanted Verstappen to win? Who knows? But either way, I don't personally believe it, and it doesn't seem like either of the other two do either. Tommy, final thoughts?
I did actually just think of another example that is kind of similar to where Imola last year, where Hamilton managed to get what turned out to be a better strategy and win, where Bottas was the unfortunate thing where he had to react to stay ahead, and then Hamilton, because he's behind, could get could try something different, and then it paid off. And that's exactly what I think personally happened with Verstappen. It wasn't them trying to get Ricciardo out of the way. It was just, look, we need to split the strategy. And Verstappen ended up on the best strategy, because we haven't mentioned actually that Vettel was 5 seconds behind at the finish despite making an extra pit stop. So it wasn't miles off. You know, if he was 20 seconds behind, you'd be like, that's the worst strategy in the world. But he was catching
them.
And
the fact Vettel went for the three stop, yeah, as so well, Vettel right? went you know, for it. It shows that other teams thought it
yeah,
was
it wasn't like
too.
They just completely just sold Ricciardo out and went, get out of the way of Max, putting you on a three stop, and then he finishes fourth. You know, Vettel's strategy almost worked. He was flying through the field. You know, maybe without Ricciardo racing him, he might have caught right back up to them. So it was very touch and go. So yeah, I don't believe there was anything.
So was that your final thoughts then? Are we calling that your final thoughts?
My final thoughts is, let's hope Red Bull can challenge this year, because I want to see Verstappen at the front again, challenging.
Really?
Every year we hope, every year we're let down. Katie, what about you?
My final thoughts is that I cannot believe this was 5 years ago.
But yeah,
it seems absolutely balmy. That it literally feels like it happened last week or last month.
Of course it does for you, because it scarred you that Rosberg was crashed out.
Yeah, but no, it's mad to think that it's been 5 years since this accident, or 5 years since Rosberg retired this year. And that Max Verstappen has been in F1 for, this is my bad point, Matter, 6, 7 years? 7 now?
6 and 7 years. He's been
6/7. My math is really not my strong point.
Go on, what's the equation, Katie?
Seventh.
Come on.
Seventh year in F1.
7.
That's a career.
Quick maths.
That is mad. Yeah. Seventh season in Formula One, and how old is he now?
And he's 14.
He is 23, which is normally the age like people get into Formula One a lot of the time. And
yeah.
Another thought, actually, Verstappen's records may never be broken, because we mentioned earlier about the whole super license points place, yeah. And there's age limits now, and the fact that they put this in, it was almost like a Verstappen rule, and then he's proved everyone wrong and won the race and done that at the young age. So yeah,
perfect. My final thoughts is, yes, more drama please, thank you. Especially around Spain.
Yes. About as good as
which
you're
I think
get.
It's very wishful thinking, isn't it? Having any sort of drama around Spain. Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much to you all for watching and listening. Make sure to get involved in the conversation, hashtag WTF1 podcast, for any suggestions for future That Time Whens, or any questions for our normal podcast as well. And, well, of course, give us a like if you enjoyed it. Give us a 5 stars or whatever. As you know, we deserve nothing less. And that's it. We're done. We're finished. We're good. We're 1 month away almost until Formula One returns, hopefully, fingers crossed. And we can all get back in front of our TVs on a Sunday afternoon.
Lovely. That's a lovely final thought.
Lovely. There you go. Wonderful. Beautiful. Thanks so much, everybody. Goodbye, Katie and Tommy. See you soon. Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday. Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego chicken sandwich, Fuego fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.